You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Well, this portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. We have the Nets against the Celtics tonight. You could watch that game on Picks 11. Also, you could follow it on the Yes app. And part of the pre- and post-game coverage is the great Frank Isola.
That's right.
And he joins us right now on the show. Frank, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
Boys, what's up? I'm surprised that I'm working. I thought we'd get a sweep, but I think Joe Tsai, the owner of the Nets, is probably happy that the Celtics won one game. He gets an extra home game in a series that he probably knows his team is going to eventually win, probably
now,
win tonight.
There's no way that the Nets want to go to Game 6 because you never know what's going to happen in Boston with that crowd. But I was so impressed with Game 4, Frank, because to me, it was the perfect encapsulation of what this Big 3 can be. Forget about the defense they play. Who's going to outscore the three of them and the rest of the Nets? This team is so good. And Draymond Green came out today and said nobody is beating them in the East. And I'm going to take it a step further. I don't see any team presently constituted in the West that could beat them either.
Yeah, I said it a couple weeks ago. I think the team that will be the toughest series for them will be Milwaukee. I don't see anybody else in the East. And then even the Western Conference, first of all, LeBron and the Lakers might not even get there. And I get the Clippers are tough and Utah's a very good team. But the Nets are just, you know, lethal offensively. Even the game that they lost, they did, you know, they started the game on a 19-4 run and get the Celtics for showing a lot of fight. And obviously Jason Tatum had a huge game. The Nets really didn't do a great job defending them. But even on, you know, Sunday with the way the Nets came out with all the stuff, you know, surrounding Kyrie and Boston letting more fans than they've had in over a year, it just shows you just how good they are. The way Harden played, Durant, and also obviously Kyrie. A loss for them will be Jeff Green, though. Jeff Green was a really important player to the team. Besides the fact that he gives you experience, he could knock down a shot, he could defend, he rebounds. You know, the Nets bench, when they lose a game, and you're looking at their bench, like, yeah, you know what, it's not really that good without Jeff Green in there.
And if you think the Bucks are the toughest test, Frank, then you want to wrap things up tonight, too, just so that you don't give the Bucks that much of an edge and rest, right? Or is that overrated?
No, I don't think it is. In fact, the Knicks were last in the playoffs, if you remember, they played that Game 5 at home, and that's when the Knicks came dressed wearing black, and they said they were dressing for your funeral, and they were much better than that Boston team. That was the year that they won the 54 games with Mike Woodson. The Knicks ended up losing that game on a Wednesday. They had to go up to Boston on a Friday, competitive game. They won it, and then their series started on Sunday against Indiana. They ended up losing Game 1. They never had a lead in that series. Also, you know, the longer you go, you know, you're looking at something where, who knows, a player can get suspended, or more to the point, a player can get hurt. Look at how many players already have missed games in the playoffs. You've had Donovan Mitchell missed the first game. Dante DiVincenzo was out. Jeff Green is out. There's been a bunch of players, and now you got guys hurt. You have Luka Doncic is hurt. Joel Embiid is hurt. Anthony Davis is hurt. Chris Paul is hurt. There's been a number of injuries already, and maybe the condensed season has a lot to do with that.
Now, I don't know if it's fair to ask you this, Frank. I thought Kyrie was magnificent yesterday. Why did he have to do the thing on the logo? Why does he always make it tough to defend him? Now, obviously, doing that does not translate into that idiot throwing a bottle. That should not be allowed no matter what. But his answer to the Celtic fans was having the game that he had. What did he have to do that on the logo for?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, the Celtic fans were three giant steps away. All Kyrie had to do was disappear into the tunnel. And it would have been, you know, they went up there, or he went up there and they booed him, they heckled him. You know, the whole thing. He's faced with a lot of players have faced. And then the one idiot throws the water bottle at him, and that kind of changes things. But you never really got a straight answer out of Kyrie. Like, my thing would be, who is that being directed at? Is it being directed at the fans? Is it being directed at ownership, Danny Ainge? Is it the coaching staff when he stepped on the logo? I know guys like Kevin Garnett were upset. Big Baby Davis was upset. Kendrick Perkins didn't have a problem with it. My thing would be, my only issue with Kyrie Irving would be, you know, you want to step on the logo, that's fine. But you're also the one that's constantly lecturing everybody on respect and civility. Isn't that kind of the opposite? It's kind of a petty thing for a player of his caliber to do. If he wants to wave goodbye to the fans as he's walking off the court, I think people take that in kind of a good-natured way. It's taunting, similar to what Trae Young did when he was shushing the fans at Madison Square Garden. But like stepping on the logo, to me, I take that as that's something you're going after the Celtic organization, which gave you an escape route when you wanted to leave the Cavs and LeBron, and they put a good team around you when you were in Boston. They wanted to resign you. You said that you were going to stay there. So that's why I wonder like what the animosity is between him and the Celtics organization, if there is any.
Yeah, that's the part that sort of miffed me too, is because like if you want to take a shot at, you know, racist fans or whatever issues you have with Boston, that's one thing. But correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, it seems like this, in the tradition of sports, the disrespect to the logo has more to do with the team and the franchise than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why when Terrell Owens did it, that's how you took it, like he was doing it, you know, to the organization. And again, you know, Danny Ainge wanted to keep Kyrie Irving. You know, Brad Stevens was his coach, and you had the ownership there that was fully behind him. They did everything they could. They went out, they signed Gordon Hayward. It didn't really work out. They had Al Horford on the team. You know, they made big moves. And I think that's kind of the thing that got lost in everything, was the fact that night with Kyrie Irving scoring 39, the guy that he essentially left and who they replaced him with, Kemba Walker, couldn't even play. And then Terry Rozier was the guy that they had traded away to Charlotte. So out of the three of them, the guy that you'd rather have Terry Rozier and Kyrie Irving than Kemba Walker, who had missed 29 games during the regular season and then couldn't play in the biggest game of their season and then showed up wearing red sweatpants sitting in the front row, because I guess there's no longer a dress code in the NBA, Michael.
Let's talk about the Knicks. So tomorrow they'll try to keep their season alive, and I think that these four games have been very illuminating, where I don't know if there's enough there you could say that they're close. I think they've got to really reevaluate where Julius Randle stands, whether or not R.J. Barrett is the guy they're going to build around. I mean, have they exposed anything to you where you say you changed the way you feel about them now just by the first four games?
Well, we talked about it a lot during the season. You know, in a league where not every team and every franchise player and star player played hard all the time, the one thing about this Knicks team, and I think it resonated with the Knicks fans, is that they went out there and they played hard. But when you get to the playoffs, now everyone's playing hard. And talent wins in the end, and I think Trae Young has been very impressive. Trae Young went from being a guy that felt like he had to score 35 points a night for his team to win. Now he tries to score about 25 points, and he gets 10 assists. And let's face it, one of the most underrated players in the league is Clint Capella. I don't know why the Rockets ever traded the guy in the first place. That was a dumb trade. Because Clint Capella, thankfully, he's one of the few seven-footers in the league and 6'11 players who doesn't feel like he needs to shoot three-pointers. He does all of his damage around the rim. He blocks shots, he contests shots, he gets dunks, lob passes, the whole thing. I think it's a talent disparity. And I think Julius Randle, I don't want to use the word exposed, but he is 20-72, I think it is, in the series, and he has scored a total of 67 points in the four games. It's almost as if Julius Randle doesn't understand. You are the guy during the regular season. You need to be the guy now during the playoffs. Like, look at what Donovan Mitchell is doing with the Utah Jazz. Look what LeBron does all the time. Look at the star players on all these teams. In the playoffs, they have to bring it. Giannis Antetokounmpo is another guy. And it just seems like Julius Randle just hasn't been ready for the moment. But I also think the Knicks overachieving, you know, maybe the expectations are too high. The Knicks are not better than the Miami Heat. They had a better regular season, and Miami got swept in the first round. Look at Miami's talent that they have. You know, the Knicks are just not, you know, on a talent, you know, it's a race for talent in the NBA, and the Knicks really just don't have enough, in my opinion.
All right, so now you have to evaluate Randle. Is he a two where I'm looking for the Batman, or am I looking for Batman and Robin because he's only a three?
He's an Alfred.
That's a fair point. I do think in a crucial point in the series in game two, in a game obviously that they had to win, you know, he did hit that big three-pointer, and then I thought he got back to being the Julius Randle of the regular season. He put the ball on the floor, drove to the basket, laid it off to Taj Gibson for the dunk. Those were the aggressive plays that he has to make. But I think he's been completely thrown off this game. I even think going after Danilo Gallinari, it wasn't even that hard of a foul. I think he wants to get a medal for how hard he fouled Gallinari. I didn't really think that it made that much of an impact. Believe me, the New York Knicks front office and the coaching staff, this is something that they're certainly thinking about. And I think that's one of the reasons why Tom Thibodeau was pushing for them to sign Gordon Hayward during the offseason. I think he felt like a player of that caliber with that much talent, offensive talent, could certainly help them. Because offensively, we saw it late in the season. Remember when they played that Celtic team? I think that was the last night of the season, and it was the Celtic G League team. And they came back on the Knicks, and the Knicks were struggling offensively. I just think the Knicks offensively have to get better. And I think Randle is certainly not a number one guy. Number two, to your point, Don, I think it's debatable at this point.
Yeah, and I feel good about the future of the Knicks because I think the front office gets it, Frank. They tried to sign Bogdanovich. They tried to sign Gallinari as well. So they knew there was definitely a big hole in terms of talent. And, you know, last year maybe people didn't look at the Knicks that way. This year I think they've turned things around where the perception of the Knicks will be a little bit different for people that might want to be traded or might sign. So I think the front office knows very well. That's why they didn't sign anybody or make any deals right at the trade deadline of any import, because they want to save their assets.
I think you're 100% right, and I think that's one of the biggest accomplishments of the season. Not just that they finished fourth and the series isn't over, they still can come back and win, but I just think they've changed the perception of the franchise with the way that the front office has done their business and the way that Tom Thibodeau has organized the team. And, you know, it's a group of players which are good, solid, hardworking players. But, again, you know, the Knicks are trying to get by with Derrick Rose, and God bless him. Derrick Rose has been playing really well. But Derrick Rose was the backup point guard for one of the worst teams in the league before the Knicks made the trade. And here they are in a playoff series. Basically, you know, they needed Derrick Rose to play 39 minutes in game two to win. So Tom is stretching these guys as much as he can. And, again, it falls back on, you guys keep talking about, a lot of it falls on the shoulders of Julius Randle. You know, he kind of has made himself now with what happened with Gallinari in that game. There's more of a bit of, a target on his back. So maybe that's something which will take the focus off of the way that he's playing. But he's going to have to bring it. And I think that's going to be a hostile environment again, obviously in Game 5 because of Trae Young. And you're going to have some of the stuff now that Clint Capela said, which will get everybody fired up. Reggie Miller will be in the building for TNT. Marv will probably be doing his last ever Knick game. So I think there'll be a lot of energy in the building tomorrow night.
All right, the other thing about the NBA playoffs is the fan behavior. And it's an NBA problem, Frank, because of the proximity between the players and the fans. What does the NBA do about this? Because the problem seems to be getting worse instead of better.
You know, I remember being at a game, man, it's probably about 10 years ago. It have to be a little bit longer because LeBron was still with the Cavaliers. The game ended, and a fan in the Cavs jersey, this is at Madison Square Garden, ran across the court and hug LeBron, and like security was on top of the guy right away. I remember being at a Knick game a million years ago when Calvin Klein, the actual designer Calvin Klein, he looked a little out of it. He walked up and tried to hug Latrell Sprewell during games. So to your point, Don, that's the one thing the league loves, the fact that they could sell those tickets, and obviously every arena, they're very expensive, especially at a place like Madison Square Garden. But I think, you know, I think it was Russell Westbrook who first said we need to protect the players. I actually think the league does a pretty good job at that, and I think these arenas have. If you look what happened in Boston, the second the bottle was thrown, you know, you have players staring at people in the crowd, and you have people thinking, well, heck, I don't want you to come in the crowd and beat me up. So they pointed, here's the guy right there, the guy in the Garnett jersey. He's the one that threw it. So if you look at the four things that happened, now, the fan that spit on Trae Young, people didn't really, grasp that until after the fact, but they still caught the guy, and they said that he's going to be banned. But I think arena security and these teams have acted pretty quickly, and I think Boston, what they did up there was right. Threatening people with throwing them in jail and charging them with stuff, because that's the last thing you want to do, because now it becomes an inconvenience. And you think about this kid, he's 21 years old, he goes to college, everybody knows who he is. Is that something you really want on your so-called permanent record for that 1 minute of acting like an idiot? So hopefully fans will, you know, come to their senses. The guy last night, to me, that looked like somebody must have bet him. I run on the court, and if you could touch the backboard, we'll give you money. Because the guy ran, slapped the backboard, then was running off the court. The security guard made such a good tackle that it knocked him back onto the court, or made it look like he prevented him from getting onto the court, which really wasn't the case. The guy was actually trying to run back to his seat.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
So I'm with Frank Isola, Yes Network, a Nets out analyst, and also he has his own show on Sirius XM with Brian Scalabrine. So you mentioned Marv last time at the Garden. I said this earlier. You covered the Knicks for a long time, and a lot of contention there between you and the organization. I think if Jim Dolan wants to do the right thing tomorrow, he has Mike Walczewski introduce Marv Albert, honoring him for his career. This could be the last time he's here, and the crowd gives a huge ovation. Now, Jim doesn't care if he's liked or not. He's told me that a couple of times. I don't care if people like me, but this would clean a lot of things up. Do you think he would do it?
Yeah. I think there's a chance that he might do it. I would hope that he would, and I think, you know, it's bigger. It becomes bigger than the owner. Marv Albert is a huge part of history, and what I would do if I were the Knicks, I would play the call of Marv calling Willis Reed, limping out of the tunnel to come onto the court, and he hits, you know, a couple of shots. Before, obviously, the Game 7, the one where Walt Frazier, I think it was 36-17, Walt had in the Game 7, which gets completely overshadowed by Willis Reed limping out. I hope they would do something like that. It's going to be the last time he's been there. And at some point, you have to let bygones be bygones. But, Michael, remember, you know, the Garden is a great place. I thought the only mistake they made with the renovation is the place looks great. The concourse is beautiful. You know, you could eat off the floors in this place, for crying out loud. I thought the only mistake they made, I thought what made the Garden unique, was the tunnel in the middle.
Right.
And, you know, and let's face it, Mike, you know, the Knicks history is Willis Reed running out of the tunnel. That is the iconic moment in franchise history. I just wish they had left that tunnel there and, I don't know, maybe put a statue of Willis, because that is their history.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if they played the clip of Marv saying, here comes Willis, and Willis comes out of
100%.
And just goes to Marv and shakes his hand? Oh, it would be, the place would be up for grabs.
Yeah, and great point. I think it would be a way to fire up the fans, because the fans are still going to associate Marv Albert with the New York Knicks. And I think TNT is probably hoping for that, which is why they assigned Marv to the game. And also, Marv will be in the building. I think it's going to be the first time that TNT has had their broadcasters in the building, because obviously everything is loosened up now. So Marv will be there with Reggie. You know, the whole thing with Marv, with, you know, being the voice of the Knicks until Mike Breen came along. And then you have Reggie Miller, and everybody's talking about the villain, and there's Trae Young. It's really smart that TNT put them together. You know, the Knicks, A, could take advantage of it, and I think Jim Dolan, like you said, Mike, I don't think he cares about the PR, but I think he could do himself. It's not worth the aggravation not to do it. It would take all of about, you know, 10 to 15 seconds. Marv would get a huge ovation, and then you move on, and everyone will say, wow, that was really classy what the Knicks did.
Absolutely. It's a no-brainer. It's absolutely a no-brainer. So what time is your pregame today?
No pregame tonight, because we're on Channel 11.
But you have a,
you know, I think that morning, you know, that morning show that's on for like about 8 hours. I think that morning show is going right into the tip off of the game. So
really?
I'll be on at halftime and post game. Yes.
All right.
By the way,
cool.
Peter, I was down in your neck of the woods because I listened to Don and Peter last week. Mike, you were probably moonlighting somewhere, and Peter mentioned he was going to be going home, and I was on that Crescent Trail. What's it called? The Capitol Crescent Trail.
Sure.
I was there Sunday looking for you, did not see you.
No, sadly I had to leave. Oh, on Sunday it was miserable up.
Well, I mean, it wasn't rain, it was just cold out, but I figured maybe I'd see you. I was going to introduce you to my wife and kids. It could have been a whole thing.
Oh, I would have enjoyed that.
Frank's wife is the best, too.
Yeah.
Does a little bit of you pull for Herder during these Knicks-Hawks games?
I like the fact that he's been, you know, when the Knicks have gone after him, he's kind of stood his ground. And think about it. He's from Albany, New York. No offense to Albany. How many NBA players have come from Albany, New York?
That's a great question.
And of course, he's a University of Maryland guy. Yeah, it's hard not to.
So who do you claim more, Herder or Larry David?
At this stage, probably Larry David.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
got an award. I'm going to tell a good story, Peter, so hang on a second.
Go ahead.
When I went down to Maryland, they actually gave me like a journalism award. Peter, thanks for showing up. And there's all these pictures there. There's one of Larry David. It's pretty cool. You know, I guess
you got
an award? They honored him a couple.
When did that happen, Frank?
It was November of 2019. And you know who was there? The owner of the New York Islanders. And we had a long conversation with Don. He said, yeah, Don's a Ranger guy. I don't want anything to do with him. So I was trying to get maybe a – see if I could leverage Don, you getting the Islander play-by-play job.
Oh, wow, Don.
I was playing agent for it. But he had, that's Katie Ledecky's uncle, correct?
That's right. Oh, yeah.
He's got some connection to the University of Maryland, and he offered he said, hey, anytime you want to come to a game.
Well, so Katie Ledecky's from Maryland.
I know. She's a professional. Right. Kevin Blackstone tells me he goes swimming or works out. He sees her in the gym all the time. One of the biggest athletes in the world. And she floats under the radar, kind of like you in Bethesda.
It's a great comparison.
And I don't want to sound like Jeff Van Gundy, and I really appreciate you looking for work for me, but they already have two guys in that position on radio and television. So.
Well, Don, that's not the point. I know you want to still do the Rangers. I'm trying to get you more money. It's a leverage game.
And Don, it's not you looking for it. It was Frank.
Yes. No, I'm not going to get you in trouble.
Really, lighten up,
money.
Don.
I'm just saying, I don't want to sound like Jeff Van Gundy when he won't even look for a job that's open. Whenever you ask him about a job that's actually open, Frank, he won't answer.
I see what you mean.
So I'm a little over the top.
I get that. No, I get it. That's like it's a code among broadcasters.
There you go.
Right, because these jobs are very hard to get, Frank. And by the way, I have all the information. The Yankee pregame on Yes is at 6:30, then the game and the postgame. The Nets game is on Pix 11 and the Yes app, and then the postgame is on the Yes app.
There we go.
All right? We're all ready.
And then the morning show comes on right after that.
Wow, that's two shots.
They have on Channel 11. Yes.
What do you mean two shots?
He's taking two shots at their morning show that it's too long.
I like it. It's on all day. It's amazing.
You mean the Pix 11 morning show? Because Yes doesn't have a morning show yet.
Yeah. Follow us, Michael.
Pix 11.
It's a good interview. You should listen.
Frank, enjoy the game tonight.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
Take it easy. He really likes to stir it up, doesn't he?
Well, yeah. It's one thing to take the one shot that he closes with another one.
That's how he does it.
Well, before we break, let's take a look at this day in Yankee history.
Please.
You know, did it yesterday, don't you, Don?
No.
Bob Weasel shoes him.
Oh.
So not only did he do this moment in Yankee history, but then he told the entire story of Yankee history as well for the next hour.
Hold on. What was the schedule yesterday again?
Yeah, they broke up the show into two. So Weasel shoes him did a little bit, and then Don's best friend, Dan Grosset, did the other part.
Yeah, now, I think it was Bob from 2 to 4, and then Dan from 4 to 7
now,
into Islander pregame.
Now, when you tell me that they did the This Day in Yankee History, that's a show feature. Does that mean they attempted ENN yesterday as well?
I don't know.
Oh, they laid out. Okay, good. You know what? I respect it. Good. Sometimes ENN needs to be left alone, okay?
All right, let's take a look at This Day in Yankee History, brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. We go back to 1992. New York Yankees selected a shortstop from Kalamazoo Central High School by the name of Derek Jeter.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
With the sixth pick in the 1992 MLB draft. In case you were curious, the five players to go before Jeter were Yankee third base coach Phil Nevin, Paul Shuey, B.J. Wallace, Jeff Hammonds, and Chad Mottola.
Oops.
That's This Day in Yankee History, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. All right. The buffet has been set, 1-800-919-3776. Let's hear from you. We still have to talk about the Met owner taking a shot again at the intensity of his own fans. I don't get what Steve Cohen's trying to accomplish, but we'll break it down for the people right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.